Good morning. It is 7:44 here on the Mighty 690 as we get started with our Green Side Up program brought to you today by Green Acres. In studio, we have crop agent James Cooper, horticulture agent Kenny Dodson. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So here we are with the Interstate Fair and Rodeo. I know we're going to be talking a little bit about that here in our next segment. But I know that, of course, Kenny, you had to help out with a little bit of that judging, right?
Had to. I got to
you
help
got
out
to.
With it. Yeah, it was a good time. There was a lot of entries. And so this year we'd switched it up a little bit. We'd open it up to everyone, not just 4-H. It was one big combined class, we'll say. And there's also simplified divisions, a.k.a. classes or entry exhibits. And so that was a headache on our end, kind of. Confusion for some people, but we still got a whole bunch of entries, 700 entries, I believe. And they all got judged, as far as I know. I hope so. And it was a good time. Yeah. And the bake sale went off pretty good.
Excellent. Well, that's very good. So always good. I know they were trying to switch things up a little bit, so obviously some growing pains with that, but that's okay. So, James, we've got you here in studio today, and I know that our topic here going to be talking a little bit about some of those cover crops. First off, before we get into that, though, I drove by some of these soybeans, even despite the weather, seem like they're looking okay.
Yeah, for the most part. Soybeans they're deceiving a lot of the time because they will just hang in there. I mean, they'll just look green, they'll look like they're okay, but they're not actually growing. And that's really kind of the part of the issue, especially on this side of Montgomery County. Those soybeans are just there right now. And there are plenty of fields. I mean, the devil crop soybeans, those soybeans should be well canopied, and they're not, honestly. There's a lot of fields that just, they're just kind of, there's some seeds there, but I don't expect there to be a whole lot of yield unless we get some rain. It's not in the forecast. So we're probably going to have some pretty dismal yields again this year. The long season soybeans are looking better. Of course, they've completely stopped as well. But, you know, they've got flowers. A lot of them got little pods. And so they're just waiting for the next moisture event, and they'll go ahead and start to fill. So, you know, it's hard to make any prediction at this point, but unless we get some major rain, I don't think those double crop soybeans are going to do very well, at least in a lot of areas. But, you know, corn harvest, it's underway right now.
I mean, it's amazing how fast that dried out.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was green, and then all of a sudden it was not at all. So I would suspect by the end of the week, honestly, I mean, the combines are rolling fast right now, and so we'll get a lot of it taken care of pretty quick.
Are you looking to have any yield contests at all on
I haven't been asked yet. There's some farmers with the yield contest, you know, the farmers has to stop what they're doing at the worst possible time and do a yield contest, so I fully understand that they don't get it done. But if they did get their paperwork submitted and they do want a yield contest, you know, let me know soon. That way I can put it in my calendar and come out and take a look.
Very good. So it'll be exciting to get some of those corn numbers because that's going to be, sounds like the winner here for the
year. Yes, exactly. I mean, the wheat was kind of not very good just because it all got shattered out, you know, but hopefully the corn can help a little bit with that because I don't expect the soybeans to be that great in numbers, to be honest.
Sure. And then I'm sure that just besides that, hay operations continuing.
Yeah. And so a lot of fields are being hayed right now, or at least just were hayed. Probably not the best hay, to be honest. You probably should have hayed that about a month ago, but you know, it's the fields, the pastures, they have also pretty much just stopped growing at this point. I mean, they'll hang in there for a while too. I expect us to start to see a lot of burn when it comes to pastures pretty soon.
Sure, absolutely. Well, today I know, you know, speaking of getting out there, getting some work done, you want to talk a little bit about cover crops today.
Yeah, so, you know, there's not much we can do at this point because it's too dry out there to do anything.
Yeah, try getting a shovel in the ground now.
yeah. So I thought I'd talk about cover crops for the future. At least we can make some plans anyways. And now's not a good time to be thinking about what you need to get a hold of as far as seed and making plans in that direction. So I want to talk a little about cover crops. Some of the ones I want to talk most about are the earlier ones that we need to plant. And so pretty much clovers. Clovers is one thing that, you know, you can plant rye and even all the way into November sometimes, especially cereal rye. You can plant that really, really late. But when it comes to some things like turnips, brassicas, clovers, a lot of those need to be planted, I mean, I would say by the end of September, most years. You know, usually the if you look by the book, they're going to say by mid-September, early September, when you get those planted. Our soils are warm much longer than they used to be. And, you know, even like last year, we didn't really get a hard freeze until December. And so a lot of that stuff can kind of be pushed back a little bit. Mostly what you're looking for on timing of planting cover crops is not really about the actual day, but about soil moisture. I mean, if you plant something out there right now, you'll get absolutely nothing, right? And so, I mean, even if you plant it all the way in mid-October, it'd be better to plant it into moisture super late rather than plant it early and have nothing there to germinate with. So, talking a little bit about different types of cover crops that we could plant here, just, you know, hopefully we get some moisture by mid-September. I mean, we have the brassicas, which is
mustard, know, collard.
Mustard, rapeseed. Yeah, and I mean, there's all kinds of different stuff that they mix in with those. And, you know, they're useful in their own way. You can't plant those by themselves, obviously. But usually they're just part of a mix, really. And they do add some protein and some other things into that cattle forage. Because most of the time we expect our cover crops to be grazed, which is exactly what I would do with it, you know, or baled at some point. And, you know, a lot of that stuff, it doesn't grow aggressively by any means, and so it's just going to be part of it. And a lot of that stuff is actually pretty cheap. The seed's pretty cheap. Some people like to put some tillage radishes in there. Tillage radishes, they grow incredibly well half the time. Half the years, I don't know why. I mean, usually it's to do with soil moisture. But, I mean, they just explode in size. They can grow incredibly fast. And, you know, tillage radishes, for people who haven't really experienced these, they do look just like radishes, but they're like mega radishes. I mean, they're huge. You can't actually eat them. I mean, that is possible. They're pretty spicy. But the radishes, I mean, you know, they can get to like a foot and a half long. Wow. I mean, there's like a football.
That's impressive.
In a good year, you can grow a football-sized radish. The idea is that their taproot is so strong that it can reach down into the clay pan and break it apart. Research has shown that's not entirely what's actually happening. Most of the time, that taproot hits the plow pan and it pushes the radish up, honestly. And so you have a great big old bulb on top of the ground from that radish. So they do okay, but the researchers, they're not the best plow pan breaker. I mean, usually when you're talking about a plow pan, we're looking at more of like a ripping and rye grass, like the grassy rye, does a better job because of its giant fibrous root system is what you really need. And so that kind of, you know, we've talked about brassicas, we've talked about tillage radishes. There's some other types of peas that you can put in there as well. Not cow peas, those are the summer ones, but the other ones, like the Austrian peas, they do okay some of the time. Most of the time, I don't recommend putting a whole lot of money into them, honestly. They could make some decent cattle forage. Most of the time, their germination is so not great that it's just not worth putting them in the mix because they're a little bit pricey, honestly. So one thing that can be pretty useful, though, is clovers. And so if you really want some sort of legume in there, clovers is really what I would recommend. And that's something you do need to put in there a little bit earlier. So if you're doing a non-grass cover crop, we're talking about some sort of brassica, you know, radishes, if you want to put those in there, and clovers. And clovers can be different types. And this is also for the guys with pasture who are wanting to put some clovers in this fall. The time frame is about the same. So, you know, there's lots of different types of clovers. We've got red clovers. We've got white clovers. We got subterranean clovers, which you don't really see around here very much. I mean, and it has the sweet clovers as well. The white clovers themselves have like a whole bunch of different types of whites. What you see out there in your yards and your pastures and stuff, that's usually Dutch clover, those little tiny things. But Ladino clover is another white clover, but it gets much larger. So just imagine a Dutch clover, but it gets way bigger. It looks almost exactly the same. And so besides that, red clovers is usually one of the best options when it comes to this sort of thing, especially when you're interseeding into pastures. And it's just because of the way that red clovers work. I mean, they're not a perennial so much as they are a very persistent annual. And so, you know, they are biennial, actually, because they come up, they make a seed head, and they'll come back the next year, but then they're kind of done after that. But they can reseed themselves pretty well. And they grow fairly well in hot weather in comparison to the other clovers. And so they reseed prolifically. So you have to really graze them hard. That's why most pastures around here have some red clovers in it. In a cover crop situation, it depends on what your future plans are. Most of the time, if you just want an annual clover, it's crimson that is really the best. The seed is pretty cheap. Crimson clover does not survive to the next year. And so it grows fast in the fall. You know, it looks beautiful in the spring, and then it's done. And so this is just a one-time kind of thing. That's why most cover crops that have clover in it, they're going to have some sort of crimson instead.
Now, with that clover, you know, is there anything special when we're spreading that? Because I know that some of those seeds are really tiny, right?
Yes, and that is a huge part when it comes to planting cover crops is seed size. It's easiest to try to match seed size up, and so you're planting a lot of stuff around the same size of seed. But, you know, when you're putting that through your drill, the red clover seed is a good size. Crimson clover is a pretty good size. But some of those other clovers, their seed gets so tiny. I mean, it's like frog hair. I mean, it's so, so small. So it depends on how you're spreading it. If you're going to do a broadcast, really you're just putting it in with some fertilizer and you're just spreading it out. If you get little tiny seed, if you're trying to spread ryegrass with a spreader or with fertilizer, you're not going to get very good coverage. So just keep that in mind. Sometimes you don't really care all that much. If you get good coverage, you're doubling it up. Basically, you're making two paths rather than one. You know, if your spreader goes 100 feet, you're going every 50 feet because you don't expect that seed to go very far. But yeah, for the most part, if you're going to drill this in, it's a little bit easier because the drill can kind of take different sizes of seeds. But if you're putting some peas in with some clover, I mean, I don't know how you get that regulated, right? Because you're going to have a big old pea coming through there and a whole bunch of little clover is going to come with it. I don't know how you get that right.
Do they ever come coated, corrected? So if a seed is way too small to begin with, like that clover seed, they can either coat it with like a chemical sometimes for pesticides, but they can also just coat it with clay or something?
Yes, yes. And so Bermuda seed is very commonly coated, and there are some other grass seeds. And so alfalfa is another one. It's usually ones that have a little bit of a higher price to them, like they need them to be correctly done. And those are the ones that are often coated. But yeah, it's that actually a type of clay that they roll them in, and so that way they're bigger. Because if you've seen a Bermuda seed before, I mean, just like out in your yard, I mean, they're so, so tiny. I mean, it's dust, really. Yeah. And so if you put some clay around there, you can actually get it through the drill. But keep that in mind as well. If you have a clay-coated seed, your planting rate is going to be different because we give recommendations based on pure live seed rather than actual weight. So keep that in mind when you're doing this. So for right now, if you're thinking about cover crops, you're thinking about, you know, what you can go in. Your soybeans look terrible right now. You're thinking about, there ain't nothing there. Of course, you probably have to wait for your insurance before you can really make any decision. But, you know, you want to do some cover crops in there just to protect the soil if we do get some rain at some point later on.
Sure.
Take some soil samples, you know, prepare with what you're going to go with. And most of the time, I recommend this, go with whatever's cheap. The fancy mixes with all sorts of stuff in it don't do any better covering that crop than the cheap stuff with only two or three. And so, you know, keep it very simple when you're doing this stuff, because sometimes cover crops completely fail too.
Sure. So. Some good advice. James Cooper with KE State Extension coming up. Kenny Dodson's going to be talking about some gardening and landscaping topics next. Good morning. It is 8:11 as we continue our Green Side Up program. Joining us back in studio, we have Kenny Dodson, horticulture agent, James Cooper, crop agent. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good morning.
All right. So we do have, of course, we're going to be talking maybe about any upcoming events that you got here in a little bit, if you have any. But, of course, we last segment talked a little bit about some cover crops here with James. This segment, we've got Kenny with us, and we're wanting to talk a little bit about some gardening and landscaping topics here as we continue right along. So where do you want to start?
Absolutely. So along with James, I'm also talking about some upcoming looking ahead type stuff. I'm going to talk about a lot of different fall plantings, including the gardening, but then also some landscaping and also some cover cropping, maybe a little bit of grass as well, just because you can plant a lot of things in the fall. It's just a matter of why you're planting them, when you're planting them, timing it right, and also making sure they get some water, because ideally in the fall it's decent temperatures usually, but they still need some water, especially anything starting from seed, and not all the times we get that, but ideally we should. So the first thing I'll start talking about is covering from James' cover crop topic. There are many things that we can put in our garden after our crops are done, after our veggies and fruits are done. Yours probably aren't yet, unless they all got toasted and you're just ready to start filling up the space anyway. Not everyone's had that misfortune, but it's been a pretty hot one recently, especially with extreme heat warnings. And also, just a reminder, even with the extreme heat warnings, just because your crops are not producing doesn't mean they're dead. Just because your trees and your grass are kind of browning doesn't mean they're dead immediately, just to ride out the summer heat wave. But for the garden, so if those crops are already pulled, already brown, already dead, it is a really good idea to start putting down a cover crop, especially if you're looking to rejuvenate your soil a little bit. Like James mentioned, probably one of the best cover crops, in my opinion, is going to be some kind of clover, whether that be sweet clover, red clover, crimson clover. A little easier to spread at your home or in a small plot than it is to spread in a big, giant field spreader. But then there's also things like wheat, barley, and rye, some great winter grasses that, you know, you'd think about them as like your crop, the thing you're growing for your wheat, barley, or your rye, or you can just think about them as a nice grass cover crop, and then come spring, they crimp them down, and that's when you basically just break the stems off and let them return to the earth before you really start to plant into them. You can plant into them, whether that be like direct sowing, a no-till situation, or you can till them up. The whole idea is just to get as much organic matter and nutrients back into the soil as possible, and to have something that covers the ground, helps absorb moisture, loosens the soil, all that good stuff.
Because if you don't do it, the weeds will.
Exactly. So you might as well have some nice ryegrass and then eventually crimp that down. Or even better yet, clover. Some kind of legume or pea and bean family type plant, that way it has a nitrogen credit. You'll probably still, especially if you're like growing corn and stuff, you'll probably still do some fertilizing, just because clover can only do so much. You still got to feed the soil a little bit yourself. But those are some great cover crops. But things you can plant, especially if your garden's empty or emptying, you can plant a lot of stuff in fall, especially things like James mentioned, brassicas. But for us, we're growing them for the actual broccolis or the actual cauliflowers and cabbages. Those things love cool temperatures, and typically August, September are great times to transplant them, obviously not trying to seed in the middle of the heat of the summer, especially with those cold crops. But starting a transplant indoors right now would be great. If you can find a transplant somewhere, probably not very likely, but keep an eye out. But transplanting those things in August, late August or September are great, and they should have plenty of time to put on a nice head, especially if you've got an early maturing variety. Almost any of these garden crops I'm going to recommend, it's just a matter of looking at the seed packet, finding that days to maturity, which is a generally good recommendation. Like this thing takes 60 days to reach a nice broccoli head, so you just count backwards from there.
So it's kind of like the opposite situation of what we deal with in the spring, where we're waiting for things to warm up. You could actually start them indoors where it's cooler and kind of wait for things to cool down enough to where they could do well outside, right?
Absolutely. And the benefit of things like broccoli, at least, in spring, we're like, oh gosh, I hope it doesn't heat up. My broccoli is going to turn to like complete, utter garbage, which mine kind of did this year. But in the winter, usually the nice cold snaps can either help shrink the broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower plants, or at least just help them develop better and not usually stunt them, not until like it's lower than 30, usually. A nice light frost or light chill event is great for those types of crops, but too far in the winter you're not going to get any crops. But that's the benefit of those things. There's also some pretty fast crops, things like your spinach, Swiss chard, lettuces. Those are great. Like I mentioned earlier, if you're seeding anything, you're trying to grow something, it's really a matter of water right now. So even though they grow pretty fast, they're pretty decently grown in heat or a little bit of cold. They're really going to need some water and probably some shade, especially right now with afternoon shade or even just midday shade, or even just wait until we're not in a heat wave.
I feel like the lettuce, for at least for me, just bolted really fast this year. It was just like, pfft.
Yeah, well, and so that's why these aren't a plant today, unless maybe you're thinking transplants, but maybe plant in the next coming weeks. Hope for a cold front. It's always hard to exactly pinpoint the gardening time because it's like, well, if the weather cooperates, and it doesn't always cooperate, especially when it's supposed to cool off, and it doesn't always cool off.
And it does look like, at least looking at the 8 to 10 day outlook, we're still going to be above normal, but they've changed things around. The 8 to 14 day precipitation a while back said it was going to be below normal. Now they're saying near normal. So at least some good news for everyone, hopefully, at least on the precipitation, fingers crossed.
And he's basing that off of the NOAA maps, and NOAA also posts a nice 30 day or a month out outlook. I never know if I can trust those just because it's weather. And they'll also post like a 3 month outlook. And usually they always say it's going to be warmer, it's going to be drier, but that's up to you. Always look at your calendar, look at your forecast, figure out what you want to do. Make sure at least your calendar time frame is right and make up for the weather with your practices.
So speaking of rain and such, I noticed on my way in this area, the hackberry's already losing their leaves.
I mean,
they do that when it gets dry out. That's just their natural response. But even the other types of trees are getting a little bit yellow, starting to run out of water.
Oh yeah.
They're doing they're doing their thing. They're firing off like they like to do. But for people around their yards with non-native trees, trees that kind of need to be babied a little bit, what do you recommend right now, especially in the southern side of Montgomery County, as far as getting them watered and all that?
Right now? So like you said, the most important thing is water, because there's not much else we can do. A lot of site factors, like how much shade they get in the afternoon, any kind of northerly, southerly winds that might help with, you know, winter cold or summer heat. Those things are the things you determine at planting. And once they're planted, that's kind of what you got. But right now you can absolutely give them plenty of water. Usually about 5-10 gallons a week is good. Usually we recommend like a nice deep soak. So sometimes that is just a couple loops of a soaker hose. Sometimes that's those tree bags. They tend to not fit on large trees. So that's when I recommend a 5-gallon bucket with a small hole drilled in the bottom. Those tree bags, those gator bags you see, they're basically just a 5-gallon bucket with a small hole drilled in the bottom. So if you're able to recreate that yourself, you can do that. You can move the bucket around. A nice slow trickle helps to get the water deep into the ground. But then also remember, a tree's roots go out twice as far as their canopy. So a large area to cover, try to make sure it's some water, because it's not getting any water in the weather right now.
Yeah. What about for bigger trees? And so, you know, that 5 gallons is for the ones you kind of just planted not very long ago. But I guess I've always kind of wondered, like, how much water versus how big of a tree? What does that chart look like? I don't know.
I believe it's going to be about a 1 to 2 inch per, like, area. So when we talk about, like, watering your grass an inch, they're talking, like, the tuna can method, where you put, like, a rain gauge out every so feet, every spots. And that's essentially meaning every area of the lawn should be getting 1 inch of water in that area during this time frame. And so if you're able to measure that out for an entire tree, it's going to be a lot of water, because it's going to cover 100 square feet, several hundred square feet.
That'd be hundreds of gallons.
And it's up to you if that's economical. You can always mulch your tree better, because mulch helps insulate the soil and protect the moisture from evaporating, from moving too fast, and obviously from being taken up by grass. So that's why a big mulching is always recommended. But that's our fall stress and our fall color, because not only are we planting for fall, we're also seeing fall in trees right now. And that also leads us back to the landscape. So our graphic, plug for Facebook, our graphics on Facebook did say I'm talking about fall landscaping. So I guess I'll do that.
Yeah. No. So what should we be thinking about with that?
For landscaping, the first thing I'll start off with grass, because the grass isn't looking too great just because of the heat stress. Usually September, October is a great time to seed fescue. Almost any of those cool season grasses, fescue, bluegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, they're going to be a lot more cool loving, which means they can germinate in some heat, but they don't want heat stress as they're developing. So usually that means October, late September, potentially November. I just hate to tell people, oh yeah, it'll be 80 in Christmas again, because we don't want 80 in Christmas, at least I don't.
Yeah.
So it's usually best to aim for September, October to seed any cool season grasses like fescue, like that bluegrass. And then trees and shrubs and almost any plant like that, any hardy perennial, woody perennial, they're going to be great to plant in the fall, especially if there's enough time for them to get a root system established, especially for planting a bare root stock that can be planted in fall or winter because it's already dormant. Things that are actively growing are things you want to put on new growth, not really something you want to plant right now. You're just trying to get those plants in the ground, establish roots. They're going to go dormant no matter what, and they'll pop up in the spring.
Well, that's very good. So, obviously something to think about if, you're kind of stuck inside and I can't really, don't want to be out in this heat right now. I understand, around the house, that maybe one of the last things you want to be doing right now, but mm-hmm. Wait till that weather breaks and then we'll get out there and, get some landscaping done. It'll be very good. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as well, I know we did have a question from a listener. I know this is really more of a topic and a question for Wendy, but I was curious if maybe you've heard any updates on the New World screwworm status. I know that they're still working on some of that sterile fly production. And I actually did a little research on the sterile fly production, how originally when this came out in the 50s, they were using radiation. I know there's some new methods where they don't have to anymore.
I think they still use
it. But I think that's still what they do. But someone's trying to develop a new method where they don't. But I think the tried and true method is still radiation.
Yeah. And keep in mind, though, that this is not like, it's not like the old sci-fi The Fly, right?
Yeah,
you're not going to have
like this
weird
giant radioactive fly.
Yeah, this is like a very small, just to make them sterile.
Well, a lot of our food is irradiated.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's this normal. Is two completely different levels of radiation. This is not Hulk radiation. But they radiate the flies and they grow them in this giant vat warehouse of rotten meat, and it's gross.
Flies are not good.
Load them up on planes and they kick them out, and it's a strange operation. Mm-hmm. But as far as I've known, I haven't heard any major thing that they're getting farther and farther north. And so I guess it was a little bit since I've seen the last one. I don't think they've made it even across Kansas. It's a fairly slow moving fly. Unless we get it back into Mexico, it will probably get into this area sometime in the, late summer. But for right now, I don't know that it's actually spreading quickly, honestly.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It doesn't seem like it was a big thing for a little while, but it seems like that fervor has kind of died down a little bit, even though they know it's still out there.
And again, it can't overwinter here. It won't survive the temperatures.
No, it does not survive the temperatures here. And so, it starts back from wherever the frost line is every single year. But that's a lot of insects do that. I mean, fall armyworms to fungus to all sorts of things. I mean, that's what they do. They're moving with the wind, and unless we get control of it, this will be yet another one that we deal with. So
I saw an actual hornet. I usually don't really see those, but I mean, it was all dead and like curled up or whatever. I feel like that's a little, I'm used to seeing the wasps all the time, but mm-hmm. seeing an actual giant hornet, I was like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, they're around.
No, thank you. So as we wrap up our time here with folks at K-State Extension, any events that are coming up, I want to let people know about it all.
There's several events coming up, actually. I don't think either of us have anything big coming up. I'm still going to fairs. But there is a New to Medicare seminar. I believe Julie and Valerie are both putting that on. It'll be held at the Parsons Research Center. It'll be on August 17th at 5:30 p.m. That's for people looking to get into Medicare, understanding their options. There's going to be a couple events starting off on September 1st. I believe the first one, or I guess they're both the same day, Lemonade Day in Girard starts on September 1st. And that's a series where kids can learn about entrepreneurship, business model, income, and they'll essentially make a lemonade stand and treat it like an entrepreneurship challenge where they're marketing and businessing themselves. That's going to be in Girard on September 1st, then 8th, 15th, 22nd, every week. And then on the 29th is when they actually have their Lemonade Day sale on the Girard Square. And then also on the 1st is when Debbie kicks off her Stay Strong, Stay Healthy class at the Independence office. That's from 9:30 to 10:30. It's going to be on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's going to start on September 1st and go all the way till October. Yeah. I think almost any of those events, the Medicare and the Stay Strong, you call 620-331-2690. And the Girard office for the Lemonade Day is 620-724-8233. Or just call any office and we'll get you signed up.
Yeah. I know the Southeast Center, they're planning their cattle field day, their fall one. I don't think they have quite a day picked yet. That'll probably be the sort of the end of September, beginning of October. At least that's what I heard last. But yeah, I will report on that next time.
Very good. So, and I know, Kenny, we mentioned in the last segment, you kind of got a first look at some of the indoor exhibits. I know they're going to be having an open house here tonight, kind of in conjunction right after the bean and watermelon feed. So anything that stuck out to you over there at the exhibit building there at the rec center?
I will say there was a very nice pumpkin, somebody like a good 20, 30 pound pumpkin, I think. There were some good bouquets. These are things I'm judging, of course, but then obviously there was just some amazing, a whole slew of food, just so much food. There's some really good paintings over there. There were photos, but I'm not really qualified for photos, but I will say there was some good flowers and some good paintings.
That's great. That's very good. James, have you gotten to check anything out at the fair yet this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Crawford County Fair was last week beforehand.
Yes.
And, you know, it was good. We didn't have any, the indoor was all outdoor this year because the Marvin Green building was down. But yeah, it was good, you know, kids and stuff. And I think that had a pretty good turnout on a lot of things, honestly. And so it was a good size fair this year, really.
Yeah. And I'll say a lot of the art exhibits over there were good. They had like an 80 pound pumpkin.
Yes.
If we're comparing pumpkins. And they also had like a lot of quilts, like a lot of really good quilts.
Yeah, they really were. Yeah. It seems like the open class is very popular in Crawford. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that pumpkin was huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like you could fit a kid inside that thing. I mean, it was a big pumpkin.
It could have been bigger if they hadn't snipped it.
Yeah, possibly.
Potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, they had to bring it in at some point.
I know.
So.
Yeah.
That's good. All right. Well, guys, if folks do have questions for you after the program here, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The number for Girard is 620-724-8233.
And then Independence is 620-331-2690. Or just call any office and they'll get you to us.
Okay. All right. Well, James and Kenny, we appreciate you joining us here today. And I hope you can enjoy the fair here as we get into a very busy interstate fair and rodeo. And we'll look forward to chatting again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. And up next, we're going to be talking with Luke Carr from the Interstate Fair and Rodeo because it is night one of the PRCA Rodeo. That's all coming up here on the Mighty 690.